Good evening, friends. Read almost any early pioneer record of life in Michigan, and you will run across mention of an amazing natural phenomenon. I refer to the enormous flocks of wild pigeons that wandered over the country from winter to summer nesting areas. During the migration, the birds flew at a very high speed, 40 to 60 miles an hour. The size of the flocks, reported by reliable witnesses, almost staggers the imagination. The pigeons flew in a front of about a mile, and many flocks are reported 200 to 300 miles long. They often took all day to pass a given point. The sun was obscured, the air reeked with pigeon smell, and the roar of wings could be heard 5 miles away. One flock, described by Audubon in Kentucky, took 3 days to pass. According to the estimate of this famous ornithologist, this flock must have contained close to 25 billion pigeons. Now, these passenger pigeons were very gregarious beasts. They invariably stayed with the flock. The winter and nesting roosts were scenes of great confusion. As new flocks arrived and attempted to alight in crowded trees, limbs gave way, and nests, eggs, and squabs fell to the ground. Each pigeon lay only one egg, as a rule, and the nests were not well constructed. Mortality was very great. The coming of the white man brought into the primeval conditions of the forest a new factor. Swamps were drained, woods were burned or cut, and large numbers of the birds were slaughtered for food. Passenger pigeons were very good to eat. The New York market in the late 1870s absorbed 100 barrels a day without a break in the price. Pigeoners, or netters as they were called, pursued the flocks from state to state during the year and made good money. The last great nesting was near Petoskey, Michigan in 1878. The nesting area there was 40 miles long and varied from 3 to 10 miles in width. It covered 100,000 acres and the feeding area was even larger. Pigeoners killed and sent to market from this flock more than 300 tons of pigeons. Today, this bird has almost become extinct. Now, other birds have been subjected to these same conditions without suffering this same fate. The canvasback duck was hunted by skilled professionals for half a century after 1860. A large percentage of its southern breeding range was wiped out as sloughs and lakes were drained. Furthermore, the original numbers of canvasbacks must have been much smaller than that of passenger pigeons. But the canvasback has not become extinct. This bird became shy, wary, and clever. As fast as man thought up new ways to destroy it, it learned in one season how to avoid destruction. In short, it was able to adapt itself to changing conditions. Not so the passenger pigeons. They doggedly pursued their established habits. If a nesting forest was on fire, they attempted to alight in it just the same. If a line of flight just cleared a hilltop, all pigeoners had to do was to stand on the hilltop, wave poles, and they could kill enormous numbers. Blind instinct seems to have driven these birds like a swarm of locusts or army ants on the march. They evolved no method of defense up to the very last. I think this is a rather impressive example of what happens in nature to an animal or other living organism which proves incompetent to adjust to changing conditions. It seems to me we can well apply this example to man in the year 1946. He is confronted, in the development of atomic energy, with a new condition as dangerous as the coming of the white man was to the passenger pigeon or the canvasback duck. The only difference is that the atomic bomb is an instrument of our own devising, whereas the birds had nothing to do with the changes wrought in their environment. But that is not an important difference. The question remains whether man is sufficiently adaptable to new conditions to survive, or whether, like the passenger pigeon, he will cling to his old habits even though they lead him to extinction. Just as the passenger pigeon was organized into flocks and had no being outside the flock, so we are organized into nations. Up to now, these nations have been laws unto themselves, pursuing their own way regardless of conditions. It is obvious that unless we wish to surrender the advantage of machine civilization, we cannot break up the flocks and live each family unto itself. Conceivably, that would be one way to thwart atomic destruction, to break up our big cities. That seeming impractical, the only remaining recourse is for nations to learn how to prevent the use of atomic energy for destructive ends and to utilize it for creative purposes. But is that possible? Can we throw off our ancient habits, our prejudices, our instinctive modes of behavior? The canvasback duck did, and he survived. The passenger pigeon did not, and he became extinct. It seems to me that the lesson of these two birds should give all of us something to think about. Good night.
Four listeners to identify. Each contestant may ask me one clue question and then tell me what he or she thinks the subject of our Tony treasure hunt is. Now, if none of our contestants today solves our treasure hunt, then the contest is wide open to you folks at home. So be sure and listen carefully for important clues which you'll get from the contestants and from me, and we'll tell you what you folks at home can do to win our pyramid of prizes later on. What is your question for today?
Is it above or below the ground?
It is above the ground. Would you like to take a guess as to what you think the object of our Tony treasure hunt is, Mrs. Wall? Huh? Hmm?
Yeah. Oh, I don't know.
What do you think it might be? Mr. Wall, would you like to take a guess? Huh? Win all those wonderful prizes over there? If you or some of the other contestants don't win them, why, the people at home will take them, maybe. What do you think it might be, Mrs. Wall?
Is it a Grumman's Chinese Theater, cement autograph, or Shirley Temple?
Oh, I know what you mean. No, it's nothing like that. We had some clues so far that it's in the United States. It was not here when the Pilgrims landed. It does not sail, swim, or fly, and it is constructed not in its natural state. And our clue-packed poem, I'm going to repeat this because some people at home didn't understand all of it. The first of its kind, or a feature attraction, are the best means of getting quick public reaction. Listen carefully to your radios, and if you're cagey, you may be the winner, who knows? We'll add two more important clue lines at the end of today's program if nobody solves our Tony treasure hunt by that time. Right now, though, I'd like to ask our... ...and take brought to you from coast to coast by the makers of Tony Home Permanent, the Cream Cold Wave. No one of our contestants today solved our Tony treasure hunt, so all you listeners at home may try your luck by writing in your answers, except, of course, employees of the Tony Company or of CBS. Just write us your answer with a short paragraph telling us how you arrived at your conclusion. Just address your letter. Bill, will you give them the address there, where to send their letters, their entries?
All right, John, address your letter to the Tony Treasure Hunt, care of the Columbia Broadcasting System, New York 22, New York.
Would you repeat that?
Well, John, I'll be happy to.
All right.
The Tony Treasure Hunt, that's Tony Treasure Hunt, care of Columbia Broadcasting System, New York 22, New York.
You must send to that address, and all entries must be postmarked not later than midnight tomorrow night, that's Sunday, September the 7th. All entries become the property of the Columbia Broadcasting System, and the decision of the judges is final. In case of a tie, the letter with the most interesting and clue-packed answer will be declared the winner. Our wonderful pyramid of prizes that American women want most now includes thousands of dollars worth of things. First of all, a Grand Gas Range, an RCA Victor combination radio phonograph, a Westinghouse refrigerator, two Pullman fireside chairs, each worth $100 apiece, an art-carved diamond ring from J.R. Wood & Sons worth $300, a bright with silver fox jacket made by Fromm, a Comet motor scooter, 90 miles to the gallon on that, you know, and one of those wonderful Launderall automatic home laundry with a reverse-a-roll movement, and then a new American Kitchen 66-inch kitchen sink. They're all over here in our stage. Now, if we receive no correct answer by mail before next Saturday's show, we will add still more prizes to our pyramid. I don't know why you folks can't get this particular thing. Our clue-cluttered poem once again reads, "The first of its kind, or a feature attraction, are the best means of getting quick public reaction. Listen carefully to your radios. And if you're cagey, you may be the winner. Who knows? Now, we're adding two more lines. You better write these down. Steel yourself. Take pencil in hand. Check the clues carefully. The right answer, you'll land." I'm going to repeat that. Steel yourself. Take pencil in hand. Check the clues carefully. The right answer, you'll land. Well, now, why not try your hand at solving our Tony treasure hunt for the big pyramid of prizes that American women want most? Send in your entries. We'll be back again next Saturday at this same time, of course. We found out today it's above the ground. It is worth more than 10 cents. We want to know whether it had anything to do with the movies. It does not. Another lady asked whether it had anything to do with the winning of the war, and I said yes and no. And you remember the explanation. But now it's time to go. And this is John Reed King waving goodbye and reminding you that when you wave, make it a Tony Home Permanent wave. Goodbye, everybody. Get those entries in.
Remember to send your entries to the Tony Treasure Hunt, Columbia Broadcasting System, New York 22, New York. Entries.